Take a stand for life. Join Issues Etc. regular guests Matt Harrison, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, Robert George, and others for the 2015 LCMS Life Conference, January 22nd through the 24th in Arlington, Virginia. The LCMS Life Conference is held in conjunction with the National March for Life. For more information, click the LCMS Life Conference logo at issuesetc.org. It's your time to stand. The 2015 LCMS Life Conference.
Well, the midterm elections that were recently concluded certainly at least indicated some kind of a shift on issues. I remember after the elections, people were trying to remind us that the issues of life and other social and moral issues had nothing to do with the outcome of the midterm elections. That's not true, but is that the only political layer we ought to be paying attention to? What about statewide pro-life legislation and the changes there, the future there for the pro-life cause? We're going to be talking about that here in the first few minutes of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Monday afternoon. It's December the 1st. You can join us for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or our beloved on-demand listeners can always use our Issues Etc. comment line any time of day or night, 618-223-8382, 618-223-8382. After we discuss statewide pro-life legislation with Mary Spaulding Balsh of National Right to Life, Pastor Jim Remke will join us. We'll talk about John the Baptist. He is a big figure in the season of Advent. We'll find out why, and, well, a big figure in the New Testament as well. Maybe that's part of the answer to that question. Bishop James Heiser will join us after that. We'll talk about Christians and space exploration. Then we'll round off today's 2 hours of Issues Etc. Talking with Pastor Tom Baker, host of Law and Gospel. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson with him, the angel visiting Mary in Luke chapter 1, usually called the Annunciation. It's actually the incarnation of Jesus Christ. We'll talk about that in the latter part of hour two of Issues Etc. Joining us to talk about statewide pro-life legislation, Mary Spaulding Balsh. She's Department of State Legislation for National Right to Life. Mary, welcome to Issues Etc.
Well, thank you, Todd.
How important is state-level legislation for the overall pro-life cause?
Well, state legislation has always been vital to the success of the pro-life movement. We have been able to pass protective legislation in the state since the 1970s, and those laws have been proven to show that they have saved lives. And so state legislation is vital to our cause if we want to save lives.
So many focused on the kind of the national outcome of the recent midterm elections. What are we looking at in the near future when it comes to state legislatures and pro-life legislation?
Well, the states will continue to play a major role in promoting pro-life protective legislation at their state legislatures. And this coming up year, 2015, I'm really behind the times, 2015, you will see many state legislatures introducing bills that will be meant to protect the lives of the unborn children. We will see some laws that will ban aborting children simply because of their sex selection abortion bans. We will see legislation that will allow a mother to view an ultrasound prior to consenting to an abortion. These are all state legislations, bills that you will see being introduced in the state legislatures meant to save lives and protect their mothers.
If you had to say, and I'm sure that this is kind of a multi-front advance, but if you had to say which states are kind of leading the charge when it comes to either legislation that restricts abortion or puts some kind of limits on the entire process of a woman seeking an abortion, where would you say the leaders are there among the states?
Well, we have several states that have been successful in passing protective legislation over the years. We can look to states like Louisiana, Missouri, Michigan, Oklahoma. I'm probably leaving some very key states out, but there are states who have always been successful and who have passed protective legislation and will continue to do so in the upcoming legislative year.
How important have changes in the state governor's mansions been for the future of pro-life legislation at that level?
Actually, it's very important, and it has been important the last several years. We have been able to change both houses of the state legislatures and the governor's executive office in several states, which enable us to get laws actually signed into law. Obviously, we need the governor to sign pro-life legislation, or we need to have supermajorities in both houses if the governor were to veto it, which has happened in several states, and we have been successful in overriding vetoes. But it's always helpful when you have both houses and the executive branch supporting pro-life legislation. And I think we will see more of that in this next legislative year.
What can you tell us about Tennessee? I understand that in November, the voters there in that state approved a ballot initiative that says that the state's constitution does not protect abortion rights. That seems like a, well, I don't think I've ever heard that kind of legislation, of that kind of legislation before. What can you tell us about it?
Tennessee is unique because what happened in Tennessee about a decade ago was that they had a state Supreme Court decision that basically implied that there was a right to abortion in the state constitution. And because of that decision, the Tennessee legislature, which has always been pro-life, was unable to pass protective legislation such as something as simple as informed consent, something that allows the mother to know about the developing unborn child prior to consenting to an abortion. That type of legislation, according to the Supreme Court of the state of Tennessee, was in violation of their constitution. So when this was put on their ballot, the people there, I think the vote was 2-1, saying, no, we don't think that that's so, and we think that something as rational as requiring that the woman be given specific information prior to making this life and death decision is something that the woman has a right to have. So we hope to see the Tennessee legislature passing that type of law this year, and we fully expect it to pass both houses, and we expect it to be put on the governor's desk, and we fully anticipate that he will sign it.
Talk a bit about the falling number of abortion clinics dedicated virtually to the provision of abortion services in the various states.
Well, there are a lot of reasons for why we see some of these facilities closing down. Some of them are deceptive reasons, and many right to life. I mean, we always applaud when an abortion facility closes down, but many of them are done simply for business reasons. It's good business, for instance, for Planned Parenthood to consolidate many of their smaller facilities into one mega facility. And so while the appearance is that many of these abortion facilities are closing down, when the truth is that it's a business decision, and Planned Parenthood is building state-of-the-art mega facilities that are centrally located, and that it, in the long run, it's going to make them more money. But there are other facilities that have been closing down because they are substandard. And you look to the case in Pennsylvania where this guy by the name of Gosnell was getting away with atrocious conditions at the facilities, and women were dying, and women were getting infection, and their children were dying as well. So those types of facilities have been closing down, which, as I say, the pro-life movement always applauds. But we have to be careful to understand that in some of those instances, it was simply a business decision by the big conglomerates such as Planned Parenthood.
Talk about the legislation in the various states that either has or may in the future limit the window during gestation, the window in which it's legal to have an abortion.
Well, I think that we now have 10 states that have passed laws that say that it's illegal in those states to kill the unborn child who has reached that point in gestation where he or she is capable of feeling pain. I think it's important for the American people to understand that back in 1973, when the U.S. Supreme Court handed down its infamous Roe v. Wade decision, that much of the information we now know about the unborn child was not available. The ultrasound images that we now have, that most parents and grandparents have of their child or their grandchild on their refrigerator, those pictures were not available in 1973. And the fact that these unborn children now are able to have surgery performed in utero, this was unheard of in 1973. All this information that we now have about this unborn child is very important and very relevant to this abortion debate, and the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act that, as I said, has been passed in 10 states, basically says all this information is relevant, and it does play a role in whether or not we should kill those children who we now know are not just a blob of tissue. We now know that they have fingers and arms, and a heartbeat as early as 14 days after conception. These are important facts about this developing unborn child that was not available to the Supreme Court back in 1973. And it's something I think that we should bring to the debate and let the American people understand just how extreme the abortion policy in the United States is.
Is there a possibility, can the states act as, in a sense, laboratories for this kind of pro-life legislation, where at the national level, then, we can consider what is the best and really, to be honest, the most feasible politically of pro-life legislation to attempt nationally?
Well, the states have always been used as that function in the pro-life movement. Back in the 70s, we were working on parental involvement laws in the states. That trickled up to the U.S. Supreme Court. When Roe v. Wade came down, it wasn't even clear whether or not the parents played a role, whether or not the parents even had the right to know whether or not their minor daughter was seeking an abortion. And what the Supreme Court said, and that came out of state legislation, the Supreme Court said, yes, parents can have a right to know, but unfortunately it's up to the states to pass legislation protecting that right, and several states still have not passed laws that would protect a parent's right to know whether or not their minor girl is seeking an abortion. But we also have informed consent legislation. That all came out of the states. And half of the states have passed laws that protect a woman's right to know. So also the partial birth abortion bill that came out of Congress a couple of decades ago passed in about 35 states before it actually was passed in Congress and ultimately became the law of the land. So, yes, the states is each state legislature does play a vital role in framing the debate for the American people and ultimately perhaps on the federal level as well.
Finally, then, I'd like your response to Planned Parenthood's president, Cecile Richards, recently when she's reflecting upon the what she also sees as a future of state-level legislation to advance the pro-life cause. This is how she talked about it. She expects state legislative attacks on women's health, even though the vast majority of the public wants elected officials to protect and expand safe access and legal abortion, birth control, and preventative health care. How would you respond to the way she's characterizing the pro-life cause at the state level?
Well, I think she's expanding it beyond our preview, for instance. National Right to Life is a single-issue organization. We only deal with abortion, infanticide, euthanasia. Those procedures which actually take the life of an innocent human being, we don't even participate in the birth control debate. So she's trying to paint us with a very broad brush, which is not accurate. But in terms of what we're trying to do in the state legislatures is what we're trying to get the American people to understand is that they're forgetting someone. When Richards tells us that you have to protect a woman's right to abortion, I would say to her, well, we have the mother that we have to worry about, but we also have an unborn child here. We have an unborn child who, in many instances, is capable of feeling pain. We have an unborn child who already has a heartbeat and has brain detectable brain waves and has the right to life. Don't we have to put that baby in this equation when we're talking about whether or not that baby lives or dies? There are two human beings that we're talking about when we're talking about abortion, and oftentimes, if always, our opponents forget that we are talking about another innocent human being. And that's what we're trying to do in the state legislature, is to get the American people, get the legislators to understand that abortion is the taking of an innocent human life. And we think that unborn child deserves protection.
Is Richards right when she says that a vast majority of the public wants safe and legal access to abortion?
I think that she's wrong. I think that the problem is that oftentimes people aren't asked the question in terms of the unborn child. If you ask the American people, should an unborn child be killed because the mother thinks that she has no other alternative, I would say to you, no. They would say, let's help the mother with whatever problem she has so that there would be a positive outcome in both circumstances. If the mother is saying, I can't finish school, don't you think we as a society can come up with something better than just saying that the only option you have is to kill your unborn child? I think that we have to look at the reasons why Americans are thinking there may be a need for abortion. And when they think of it in the individual circumstances, they will see that we are a better nation than that, and we can offer the mother a positive alternative than saying to her, the only alternative you have is to kill your unborn child. It's not a good answer. It's too easy an answer, and it is one that is actually abandoning that mother to a life of sorrow and regret when she thinks that that may be her only option, when in fact it's not, and it shouldn't be.
Mary Spaulding Balsh is the Department of State Legislation for National Right to Life. You'll find a link to National Right to Life at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Mary, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Todd.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time talking about John the Baptist, a figure that straddles both Testaments, Old and New, and figures prominently in the life and the ministry of Jesus, and, of course, prominently then in the season of Advent that has begun for the church. We'll be right back.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
Mary's song, the Magnificat, the song of the angels' announcement to the shepherds, Simeon's song of praise in the temple. The Issues Etc. book of the month is titled The Songs of Christmas. This new arch book would make a great Christmas gift for children ages 2 through 10. The Songs of Christmas is published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or you can find out more at issuesetc.org. A great stocking stuffer for young children or grandchildren, The Songs of Christmas.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Hi, this is Pastor Dan Kistler of Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Pacifica, California. A small congregation on the Pacific Coast just south of San Francisco, we invite you to join us as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation that He won for us on the cross and now delivers to us through His Word, baptism, and the Lord's Supper. For more information about us or for free downloadable sermons, visit our website at oursaviorspacifica.com. God's peace be with you always in our Savior, Jesus Christ.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/Luther Academy.